Tilehurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Hello everybody, welcome along to the Tilehurst End Podcast Extra, which is proudly brought to you by ZCZ Films and footcoaching.com. My name is Dan Wimbush. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time to listen to tonight's show, which is our putting a little bow on the end of the 23-24 season. I'm going to be joined once again by James Earnshaw from the Reading Chronicle and Andy Preston of Reading Today, and we're going to get into lots over the next half an hour or so, including the very latest on the takeover, any potential thoughts we have on who may be leaving the club over the summer, plus the kind of areas we think might need to be strengthened. We'll also wrap up some of our favourite moments from the season just gone, and, you know, we'll even have a bit of a fashion section as well, as we give our thoughts on the new kit that was launched during that 3-2 win over Blackpool at the weekend. Again, a big thank you to both of our sponsors. Hope you enjoy the show, and here it is.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tilehurst End
and facebook.com/the Tilehurst End.
Gents, how are the two of you? James, are you well?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah, just about slept off the hangover from Saturday night, and yeah, ready for what is hopefully going to be a busy summer.
Yeah, the key question: were you in the Purple Turtle on Saturday night with the players?
Yeah, well, the players unfortunately had left by the time I arrived, but yes, I was in Turtle for a little bit before moving on for what the rest of town holds on a Saturday night. But no, I called in for a little bit, and yeah, it was nice to see everybody enjoying themselves and a fair few Reading shirts still banding around, and you know, it was great to see.
Were there a few pints left over? You know, a little bit of a tab behind the bar maybe for you?
No, unfortunately no tab. No tab. So no, just the one pint and then we moved on.
Not so much as a J tab left there. And Andy President also with us. Andy, how are you, my friend?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Been a long old season for all of us, but feel a bit lost already without it, you know, just 2 days after. But yeah, thankfully everything's ended on a good note.
Yeah, I mean, this is great because usually we get together and we're talking about points deductions, protests, players leaving the football club and all sorts of just generally depressing stuff. And look, I hope we've done our best. You know, we can only, you know, bring you the news as we get it. But look, it's great to be able to reflect on what was a great escape. The quote that always comes to my mind is from the film Apollo 13, where they're discussing the ill-fated mission to the moon and they describe it as a successful failure. And I think that's overall my thoughts on this season. It was, I think, unfortunately, this is our lowest league position in a generation. But with the circumstances all around the club, it has to be considered a success. But before we get into our thoughts about the whole season as a whole, let's get into the news. James, I'm going to start with you. What is the very latest on this whole takeover scenario? Because that is going to be the key question rumbling on over these next few weeks and months.
Yeah, isn't it just? I believe, you know, there's not a great deal of news sort of banging around out there. You know, obviously, I think we know we've got until May for this exclusivity period to be going ahead. So, you know, they've got a few weeks to get their act together, but I'm not expecting anything particularly imminent. I think it's still just rumbling on. We haven't got to worry this month about any of the bills being paid, because that's obviously the money's been sent over. So that should be covered. So yeah, I think it's just a matter of giving it time and waiting and seeing. I've had nothing to suggest it's bad news, so I'm taking it no news is good news.
Yeah, Andy, we saw various documents filed with Companies House suggesting that this loan that has been given to the club to allow them to get through to the end of the season is backed against the club. I guess in a way that's good news, because if Dye, you know, for whatever reason decides to not pay back this loan, the club will be handed over to these new owners by default.
Yeah, exactly. I think we could only read that as good news, and you know what we've needed in the last couple of months is a bit of stability, and that's what this exclusivity has given the club, really, because like James said, tax bills and wages have been able to be covered. And in the background, it seems like things are going well and progressing nicely. Of course, it's hard to get any kind of real detail because of, you know, the confidentiality that has to go on now with takeovers. But yeah, from all accounts, it seems to be going well, and hopefully sooner rather than later, we'll have some good news.
Yeah, and look, the two of you have been, you know, around the club throughout this whole saga this season and beyond it, before, you know, this season even got underway and the relegation and everything along with that. I mean, James, what's the general sort of vibe around the club? Is there this optimism now amongst the staff that have been through, you know, so much over these last 12 to 24 months?
Yeah. I guess it's what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I think the squad and the town and the whole club is probably stronger now than it has been before. But obviously, there is still that frustration that up to this point nothing has been done, and we're obviously still in the hands of the wrong guy. There's obviously optimism that this takeover gets completed, but I guess there's always that horrible nagging feeling in the back of your head of what if it doesn't, because we've been let down a few times in the past this season. But I guess it's just about trying to stay positive. But yeah, the staff have obviously had the weight of the world on their shoulders this season, so hopefully at least the next couple of months and they can relax a little bit and sort of not have to worry.
Yeah, Andy, what are the kind of vibes you're getting? I mean, look, we know this takeover isn't done, and until we have confirmed new owners, we're not really going to know what their kind of ambitions are for the club. But right now, would you be expecting the bulk of this squad to still be here come August, or are you worried that a few might get picked off?
I'd say the majority of the squad will be here next season. I'd be surprised if there's too much turnover. It's not going to be a rebuilding job like it was last summer. Of course, there are quite a few players out of contract, but as Sellers told us last week, most of those, I think, other than one, at the club has an option to extend. So, we won't see many, if any at all, players leaving on a free. There's always going to be a worry that some players could get picked off, but I don't think that's necessarily the worst thing if the club can manage it properly. I think there's been cases in the past where the club have rejected offers. We look at the likes of Liam Moore, and they could have taken big money for him at one stage from Brighton and, ended up losing him on a free a few years later. So, as long as you're getting money for these players, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I guess the worry is, at the moment, with the embargo, not being able to reinvest it.
Yeah, James, if you had to put some money on any players departing the club, who would you be sort of most fearful of losing over these next 3 months?
Yeah, I guess a big one obviously is Femi being out of contract. I'm sure there's quite a few suitors looking at him on a free. I think there's a few in January as well, but he managed to cling on. And then, yeah, I guess the big ones, obviously, the likes of Bindon and Wing and Bengay have had good seasons, but I can't see any of the ones that are going, any of the ones under contract going. I think it would have to take a big offer from somewhere else to tempt the club into selling. I think the only realistic one I can see maybe going is Femi, but even that, I'm not 100% sure. The club might even have an option on him to extend it beyond the summer. I don't think it'll be a massive, massive rebuild. And if it is, then the club will at least get some money in the kitty for next January.
Andy, how much do you think realistically Reading need to go out and spend or commit to wages? I mean, how many players away do you think this team is from a promotion contending team? I mean, we've seen the quality that the likes of Portsmouth have brought to the SCL this season. Bolton, we've beaten Bolton, we've beaten Derby, who went up. But what is the key difference between Reading and those kind of sides?
Yeah, I think it's just about adding a little bit more quality, a bit more depth. Sellers said last week, there's not going to be loads of incomings. He doesn't think they're too far away from being able to compete, really compete. He's not exactly putting a tag on it and saying they're going to be up there for promotion. It's too soon to say that. But I think the most important thing is getting the players we have now tied down to contracts. Hopefully adding some good new recruits. We saw some really, really strong work from Reading in the market last summer, and they're fishing in a small pond with only being able to sign free agents, and they've got some absolute gems. I think Harvey Nibbs and Tyler Bindon in particular both been absolutely excellent. Sam Smith too. I think that is one department that they probably will be looking at is striker, because you take Sam Smith out of the team, that's quite a pivotal role taken out there. And I think we saw that in the first few months of the season when he wasn't fit. Reading looked like a completely different team with him in it. So I expect that's something they'll be addressing.
Yeah, and James, of course, we're still working under various restrictions due to our past misgivings and the punishments. Just kind of explain the sort of limitations that Reading are going to be under and for how long.
Yeah, it's just the same as what it was in January, I believe. So free, no loan fees, no transfer fees. I think there's a certain salary cap as well. And I presume the EFL will have to approve every deal like they have done for the last couple of seasons. And I think that's up to January 2025, so two more windows. And then we should be able to be free of the EFL after what seems like an eternity. I think, 2019, the last time we paid money for a player. So by then, you'll be looking on sort of 6 or 7 years without having to have the freedom of who to bring in. But, you know, Mark Bowen worked wonders in the summer to bring in who he did on a free. And, you know, with no owners, will be a very attractive club to join. You know, the journey that Reading could go on to go back to towards the top end of the Championship. I think if you want to join a journey and join a sort of project, then us under new owners potentially for next season could be a really exciting one for plenty of players that are out of contracts in League One.
This is a really, really difficult question to answer, really, because, again, we don't know what the new owner's got in mind. We don't know what the budgets, we don't know what the restraints, we don't know who's going to be there. But just right now, James, what is your kind of gut feeling as to what expectations should be for this football club based on everything that we know at the moment? What, if we know we're sat here in 12 months' time, what would you consider a good season?
I think it would be maybe a bit over the top to expect us to suddenly go from being 17th to being world beaters. I mean, we'd only have been 14th, I think, even with the points deduction sort of added back on. So, you know, still a bottom half team. I think if we get top 10 next season and then sort of build, you know, we've got a young enough team that you can have a couple of seasons of maybe building. Sellers is still learning his trade. You know, it's only his first full season as a manager. So top 10 next season and then push on for maybe top 6 the year after. But yeah, I don't expect it to be an immediate bounce straight back, as lovely as that would be. I think it'd take a little bit of time.
Yeah, Andy, what would you consider to be a good 24-25 campaign?
Yeah, it's tough to say right now because it's obviously very early stages. We only just finished the last season. But yeah, I think probably pushing towards the playoffs, maybe a bit unfair to say, you know, they should be aiming for top 6, but I think somewhere in and around them. You know, we have seen Reading beat some good teams this season, the likes of Bolton, who are going for automatics. So there's no reason they can't, just need a bit more consistency. The squad's going to be a year older, a year more experienced. And if they can hold on to some of these players, the likes of Bindon, Aziz, Smith, Wing, you know, that's a really strong core of the team. And if you can add some quality around that, you know, and have hopefully no off-field distractions, that'll play a big part. And yeah, if that's the case and there's some good additions and not too many outgoings, I don't see why they can't be pushing towards the playoffs next season.
James, you mentioned him there, Ruben Selez. Of course, fans an outpouring of love towards him on Saturday's win over Bolton. And I don't think anybody is going to say that, you know, he's not done a fantastic job within the circumstances. I mean, for you, just sort of sum up the job Ruben Selez has done and your sort of feelings on him as how they changed over the course of the year.
Yeah. No, fair play to him. You know, must admit, I don't think any of us were too sure when he first came in, and we definitely weren't too sure by December when we were, 10 points adrift at the bottom. But I think it's just similar to the rest of the squad, I guess. Been great to watch him develop as a manager and you know, not making the same mistakes again and again and again. You know, he's grown, he's developed, and he's shown a willingness to adapt and change and maybe not stay so stubborn to his you know, beliefs, especially with obviously the famous 4-2-2 and everything else that we started the season with. He's learned from his mistakes and he's grown with the squad. And, you know, it's been great to see such a genuinely inexperienced team with a pretty inexperienced manager sort of grow and develop into what's been a pretty fearsome group over the last sort of 6 months or so. So no, you know, fair play to him because he's certainly turned it around.
Andy, did you get the feeling from, you know, speaking to players and those around the club and things, do you get the feeling that everyone is buying in to this Ruben Selez project and they're excited for the future? Or was this perhaps, you know, to go on the negative side of things, was this a case of making the best out of the situation kind of season and manager?
No, I think there has been a real buy-in, especially over the last 4 or 5 months. And yeah, the young players have been absolute credit, and the way that Selez has coached them, and like James mentioned, not being too stubborn, because you know, it looked like he wasn't going to change from the 4-2-2-2, and did. But that team stuck to its principles. They're still showing a lot of things that Selez said he wanted his team to show when he came in. Moving Harvey Nibbs central, is, you know, really did revolutionise the side. There's been a lot of tactical changes he's made throughout the season, which have really worked. And, you know, most recently bringing Ben Elliott in centrally. I think he's performed fantastically in the last few weeks. Yeah, and I think these young players are only going to develop, and I think everyone can see the vision and the project there. So it's really exciting.
Well, let's look back on some of the key moments from the season. And let's start with, you know, the player of the season, man who picked up the trophy on the pitch on Saturday, Lewis Wing. I mean, James, just how important has Wing been for the season, and what have you made of him?
Yeah, no, he's been quality, isn't he? He's sort of really firmed up that midfield with the know-how and, sort of the partnership he's built up in that midfield. I know the last few weeks he's sort of dropped in between either playing on his own or in a two. But, you know, since he's, come back from injury in sort of November time, he's just been so consistent. I've never seen someone so lethal from outside the box before. You just know he's going to score the minute he gets it in a certain area. So it's good to have him tied down for a long time. And he's class above most in League One.
Andy, worthy player of the season for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it took him a month or so to settle, but once he started finding his feet, there's been no stopping him. Very much a worthy player of the season. To have someone who's not only lethal outside the box in open play, but from set pieces too, that's such an asset to have for the team. And I must admit, when he first signed in the summer, I thought, yeah, that's a good signing. You know, a guy with good championship experience. But I didn't know quite how good he was. And he's been so, so important for the team.
James, we've scored the most goals of a team to not finish in the playoff places, but we've also conceded only two fewer goals than Fleetwood, who have been relegated. I mean, what is the, that would seem to suggest the priority is on the defence. Is it as simple as that going forward? Is it just the defence that needs tightening up, or does that sort of flow into the whole midfield and attacking balance?
Yeah, possibly. It has been hard for the defenders. I think it's probably the most inexperienced backline we've ever had as a team, and probably as one of the most inexperienced backlines in the defence when you think of in the league. When you think of how many defensive partnerships we've had to build in this season alone, we've had, four or five different partnerships that have had to grow and embed together. And we've had the occasional sort of heavy defeat, I guess. It's obvious that from the attack versus the defence is the bit that needs shoring up a little bit more. But sort of over the last three or four weeks, it's obviously been hard to judge because we've been mainly safe and we've been shipping sort of two or three goals over the last few weeks. I don't think it's a consistent thing. I just seem to think that we have bad games where we concede quite a few. I wouldn't say it's a major issue. I guess if you're targeting to go straight back up, it probably is. But I think it's more than good enough to get top half with it sort of growing and the players improving game by game and season by season with the ages that they're at.
Yeah, and Andy, at the base of that defence, we've had Joel Pereira coming in ahead of David Button. He's taken his chance with both gloves and has sort of established himself now as the club's number one. Do you see that situation continuing? I did notice, he was given the famous Leonardo DiCaprio, Wolf of Wall Street, I'm not leaving speech. So it seems to suggest he's happy to stay. Are you happy to see him stay and be the club's number one next season?
Yeah, I think so. He's made some mistakes since he's come in, but I think generally he's been pretty assured. There was a mistake against Blackpool very late on, but I think we can forgive that one. The season was pretty much done, and it was a sloppy moment. But thankfully one that didn't cost anything. I think he's been good. I think the team look more settled with him. I think he's better on the ball than David Button is, and I think if you look at the stats, his save percentage has been quite a lot higher than David Button's too. It would be good to get some competition in there for him too. And of course, there's Kanai Boyce-Clark as well, who's a really highly thought of young goalkeeper who will be pushing him all the way. And I think going into next season with Joel Pereira, I don't have an issue with that at all.
Yeah, and great to see. It's worth a mention as well, of course. Fantastic efforts of the academy, qualifying for European competition next season. The women's side staying in the championship as well, despite losing basically all of their players over the last 12 months. So credit to both of them as well. And it shows that the spirit that remains within the football club. But to kind of round up our sort of look on the season, just quickly, James, I mean, what was your personal highlight of this campaign?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think it's probably got to be the Wickham, the Wickham win after all that games. You know, I'd been to every single one of those away defeats or, you know, rubbish draws, as had a lot of people. And it was just very Reading to make it one literally half an hour down the road, despite all those miles that we put on the clock. And just the sheer jubilation on people's faces and the relief. You know, it was a run-of-the-mill average, you know, November game against Wickham. It didn't really mean a great deal, but it's one that will go down long in the memory for everybody that was there and all of the players that were there. And, you know, it kind of set us on the way to where we are now. You know, it seems to be very much a pre-Shrewsbury and post-Shrewsbury. And the first game after Shrewsbury was Wickham away and we won it. So that seemed to be sort of the birth of the new Reading for the second half of the season.
And Andy, what about you? What moment in particular stood out for you?
Yeah, I think on the pitch, it's probably got to be Wickham away. I think that probably was the turning point. If I'm going to look at a home game, I think the win over Bolton was quite big. You know, you look over the course of the season, they've been one of the best teams in the league. And you know, for Reading to beat them was quite a big scalp to take. Slightly away from the pitch, one of the highlights, I think, has to be the pitch protest against Port Vale, because that's just a monumental moment for the club. That is going to be a massive moment in the club's history. And, you know, the power that the fans showed in that moment and across the whole season, to be honest, has been amazing and, you know, very much one of the turning points for hopefully a much better future.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, you know, best part of 20,000 people turning up for what is effectively a meaningless game in League One right at the end of the season shows the spirit. And I think that's been, for me personally, I agree with you, Andy, one of the highlights for me, not a specific protest or anything, but just the general togetherness and people, you know, donating money for other people to come and, you know, watch the games, you know, for free to, you know, all the people volunteering at Sail Before We Die and everything and the work everyone has been doing here on the Tarlest End and other fan sites and things as well. It really does feel like after years in that wilderness that we're slowly getting that identity back and we have something that is uniquely ours, and long may that continue. And that's my biggest hope for these new owners, is that they sort of embrace that and they've been watching and they're going to harness that spirit, because you know that's what makes a club without getting too overly sentimental. But of course, how have we not mentioned the fact we smashed Swindon at home? I mean, come on.
You know, and the march shutting down the A33.
Yeah,
there's another one. I know we lost the game, but
yeah, the EFL Trophy was quite fun, wasn't it, for a time? Especially the group stage, you just couldn't stop scoring.
Yeah,
obviously the 9-0 at Exeter, the big win over Swindon, and Arsenal won the 21s too. So yeah, the group stage was great fun in the EFL Trophy.
I'm quite comfortable that I will probably now have seen Reading's record win in my lifetime. I can't see us getting more than 9, so I'll take that with me to the grave as well.
Excellent. And, you know, we didn't lose it against Oxford either. So there we go.
No, exactly. That's the one game, and hopefully next season as well, where I would happily just draw, just shake hands before the game starts. You know, we won't even play the game. Let's just call it a draw and we'll all go home relatively happy. Because being the age I am, it's the first experience I've had with proper derby games that you don't want to lose, as opposed to QPR or Brentford, which doesn't really count.
Yeah, it's good to have that bit of needle back, and it sort of, you know, it softened the blow, I think, a lot of, you know, getting relegated. I think it would have been easy to sort of wallow in it, but I think fans have kind of embraced it. You know, the away attendances this year have been absolutely fantastic. Again, you know, you mentioned, James, the fact that how long was it since, you know, best part of a year between away victories, and fans kept going and just kept packing out away ends at Leighton Orient, at Charlton, at Wickham. Even the amount, you know, the numbers Reading are taking to games in the northwest, it's, you know, been fantastic. Even all, you know, how best part of 1,000 people at Carlisle. Fantastic work from all the fans. And again, I'm sure it's been that whole kind of reciprocal, you know, partnership, that symbiotic nature of, you know, the fans and the players and the whole club bonding together to drag us over that safety line. And long may it continue. And hopefully results will get even better on the pitch next season. But before I let the two of you go, we have kind of had a mini mailbag from a few of my TT podcast hosts, past and present, just kind of asking you two to kind of just explain your days, because I think it's one of the things I've sort of, my hands are up here. One of the very first things I should have been doing when I got you two in for the podcast extra is asking you kind of what your days are like in the media. So, you know, Mark said, ask the guys to talk us through their day at the SCL. So, James, we're going to start with you. What time did you get up? What time did you get to the ground? And what did your day look like?
Yeah. So I get up normal sort of time. I only live about 10 minutes drive from the ground, so I don't get up too early. For a three, obviously it was different this weekend being an early kickoff, but for a normal 3 o'clock, I'll aim to get there for about 12, half 12. Start work officially at 1:30. That's when the live blog starts going up. Obviously team news comes out at 2. And then food 2:15, sandwiches from Costco, and some cookies. So it used to be hot food at the start, but obviously we've all had to make cuts across the club. But any food is better than none. And then, yeah, sort of get in. Me and Andy normally sit next to each other in the press room and then move out onto the gantry at about 3:40. And then enjoy the game. And then obviously hang around after the game for the manager, which, if you were Noel Hunt, was about 1.5 hours after every game. If you're Paul Ince, it was about 20 minutes after, so you get off home. Ruben's sort of somewhere in the middle. You obviously interview him, write up all the quotes, and I normally head off somewhere between 6:30 and 6:30.
What's one of the things that always used to fascinate me before I kind of saw how the sausage was made, but to explain to everyone else, do you get in League One, though, I don't know this, do you get a TV feed of the game, or are you solely relying on your eyesight alone?
Yeah, we have kind of one like at the end of each row, but it's not like one per person. There's one that's quite close to me on the left, but I think James is probably further away. You might have one to the right of you, maybe a few seats away. But it's not the most reliable or the clearest. I think there was even a time where the monitors weren't on at all a couple of seasons ago. So it's an improvement on that. There are some grounds where it would be one per person. But that's a bit of a luxury really. It's probably not something you'd see at many League One grounds. But I have to say, the facilities at Reading for a League One club are pretty fantastic. I've not done many away games, but there's a couple in there. Fratton Park, not the best facilities. And Luton last year, the fact they're in the Premier League now is very funny. I know they've had to upgrade their facilities, but very, very amateurish.
But I think that's been one of the best things this season is seeing the other teams and the other media teams coming to our ground. Like, oh my God, no, look at this stadium. And like last year, it was like you'd have like a media team of about 12, and we only have about 2. We used to have like 3 or 4 tops, and then like 12 of them last year coming in their suits and like kind of looking down, coming from these big posh grounds. And then this season, it's like, oh my God, it's upstairs. There was one club, like, you know, it's a big ground because you have to go up 4 flights of stairs to get to the media. Because obviously some grounds you just come in and like the press gantry is like 2 rows back from the front of the stand. So it's been nice for this season for once being the big fish rather than being an average size fish or maybe a slightly below average size fish in the Championship. As Andy says, Reading is much better than the vast, vast majority of this league, and obviously there's so much potential there that they haven't yet been able to fully tap into with staff and with sort of offerings, but needs must, and hopefully when the new owner comes in there's room to grow.
Yeah, Andy, one of the other questions we had was, you know, what has the change been like for the media over these past few years since finances have been tight? Has much changed for the media? James sort of mentioning, you know, from hot food to Costco sandwiches, has it been sort of a general downgrade, or have things stayed mostly the same?
I think that's the only big change I can think of, really. Obviously, we had a couple of years of COVID where it all had changed completely and there was no food at all. And, you know, you weren't really allowed in the inside bit at all. And obviously, press conferences were done on laptops outside, and the manager would be on Zoom in another room. So that was really peculiar. So to have kind of normal service regime in the last couple of years has been so nice. We've not really felt it, to be honest. In the media room, it's not been a big change at all, thankfully. I think the only thing is hot food that we've been missing. But again, at other grounds, it's not always a given. So I think we are very lucky and probably take it for granted the facilities we do get at the SCL. Mm-hmm. So they're pretty good.
Yeah, and the other question we had, it leads us nicely into kind of what's next. And sort of questions around, you know, what does pre-season look like for you? I mean, when do you first start, get a chance to chat to the new manager? Do you kind of get fed, okay, here's when pre-season's going to start? Do you get sort of any advance info on when the tours are going to be? And, you know, are you expecting as members of the media to kind of be, in, you know, invited along for these things? James, I'll start with you.
Yeah, it all varies. So I think Paul Ince's first full season, things seemed a little bit more settled. So we were told a bit earlier for that one. And obviously it was at Bell. It was St George's Park. So we were given the opportunity to drive up there and see a game behind closed doors and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, none of us could go away last year to wherever they went, to Spain, wasn't it, I think, in the end. Although I think we were invited, I was invited, but the expenses wouldn't stretch that far. So I watched the Wimbledon friendly from a Zoom, just from a stream. But no, they're usually pretty good at letting you know. I think Ruben said this year they're staying closer to home, so I don't think they're going away anywhere particular this year. But obviously that could all change if someone comes in and lays the money down. But yeah, you know, they're pretty good at letting us know what's going on. I mean, we are Reading Football Club, and the further down we've dropped, obviously the less interest there is. There's only really me, Andy, and obviously Tim to try and keep in the loop. And Jonathan Richards from Greatest Hits covers the press conferences as well. So we're not the biggest of press backs to keep up to date on pre-season. But yeah, I wouldn't expect it till mid to late June for things to start moving and things to come back to life again. So what's that, a month, maybe even 2 months to try and fill, but hopefully there's new owner stuff to fill in that time.
Yeah, Andy, has this whole, you know, it's been a terrible situation for everybody at the club and the players and everything. And obviously, we've come through it now. But from a media point of view, has this been helpful for you? Because have you been able to sort of make closer bonds with the players, with the manager, with backroom people working at the club? You know, has your phone book swelled with contacts over this last year?
Well, the one thing I can say is that I don't think I've ever been so busy. The amount of stuff we've had to write about and speak to various people, it's been pretty relentless. Yeah, that's an interesting point, whether it makes you closer to the club. I think it probably does. And I think the club can see, for the most part, that, you know, we're behind them, and which we were trying to help throughout all the issues and trying to help generate fundraising and promote things in any way we could. So yeah, I think that's been reciprocated from the club, and there's quite a close relationship there. Obviously we have to have some distance from it to do our jobs objectively, but yeah, that our local press pack, like James says, is pretty small, but it's all guys who are local, and the club means a lot to all of us. And as we've seen across the season, as it does to the whole community. And I think we've been able to form a good bond with the club.
Yeah, and more importantly, you know all about the Purple Turtle. So, you know, you can connect with the players now on that.
Well, yeah, that needs to be an annual thing, I think. I know they did a event there early on when Sellers first joined, which is great. And obviously the end of season thing. Hopefully we'll have even more to celebrate next season. You never know, maybe a trip to Wembley. Something like that. That'd be fun.
As long as we win this time, I've had enough of going to national stadiums and seeing us lose. Yeah. I've seen four playoff finals. I don't need to see a fifth defeat. But the other thing as well, I should mention as well before we go, we did have the kit launch. A very surprising. Reading Football Club have historically been one of the last people to ever release a kit. And now they've managed to get it out before the end of this season. What did you, you know, first... We get the Fashionistas on here now. Andy, what was your thought on the new strip? Do you like it? Do you not like it?
Yeah, I really like it. I seem to sway more towards Reading home kits when they're predominantly more blue than white. I don't know why. It's just personal preference. But I think it's really smart. Obviously, a lot more of a simple design than the previous season, which I also liked because it's very unique and had that hometown feel to it. But I like it. I like it. It's nice. And I was listening to Tim Kilpatrick on the Tar SM podcast a few weeks back, and he said that there'll be 3 new kits for the next season, so we've still got 2 more to look forward to.
Nice James, plug. Smooth. Like it.
Yeah, I like it. It's growing on me. I thought it was a bit basic, must admit, from the gantry when I first saw it. But then when I went down to interview Tom Holmes, and you could actually see in the blue is crowns, and I thought, okay, yeah, that's quite smart now. It's quite snazzy. I don't mind the red bit on the trim. I don't know why, but redding with a bit of red on just always looks a little bit cooler. Something a bit different, and the sleeves as well looks quite cool. So I've actually not got any of this year's shirts. So this is currently the first year in about 10 years I haven't got any of them. So I might have to buy one in the sale. But I'm intrigued to see what the other two look like because they've been quite wacky and quite unique in the last few years. So I think there's some cool designs to come, hopefully.
Yeah, the Purple Turtle kit is going to take some topping. I've got to say, Andy, though, I'm the opposite to you in that I really like the white, the blue and white.
Really?
The blue shorts, it gives me very 98, 99-y kind of vibes, this kit. Very early Medeci Stadium era. But the shirt looks very, very smart. I think
it's probably because of the 05-06 season. And ever since, just prefer the predominantly blue ones, but the white ones can look quite clean, quite nice as well. I like most Reading home shirts, to be honest. The blue and white hoops, you can't really go wrong with that, to be honest.
Although, are they hoops? Because they don't go all the way around.
Cool.
Are they still hoops? Are they hoops?
That is a question that is apt to leave everybody on for the Talisman podcast extra for this season. Look, gents, I want to thank you both very much. So, and Jamin as well, who joined us at the start of the campaign before moving on to Pastures New. Thank you both for giving us your time throughout the campaign. Our apologies from my point of view that it's not been as regular as I'd hoped going into the season. But, like Reading on the pitch, my life off the pitch has been very unpredictable. But it's been great when the stars have aligned, even if I can't even get the day of the week straight anymore. It's been great to have you both on. Before we do let you go and head off for a well-deserved summer break, please get your plugs in. Where can people follow you and your work, James?
So the Reading Chronicle, it's obviously all on the website, and then on a Thursday. I've got 2 more weeks, I think, of my 8-page supplement to have to try and fill, and then it's going for a summer hiatus until pre-season. So lots of good pictures from Saturday. And then on Twitter, it's James_E1871. So whatever I find out, you guys will know pretty soon after.
Perfect. And Andy, where can people follow you and your work?
Yeah, so it's Reading Today for all my written work, and at AndyPreston96 on Twitter, Instagram, and occasionally TikTok too.
I was going to say, you need to...
TikTok guru.
Yeah, fill in the gaps that you've been left as... As TikTok guru.
I'll try my best, but he was a specialist in that area. I've not quite been able to be as consistent or creative as he was, but he did promise to give me some lessons at some point.
I am similarly not up with that technology, and it's times like this where I'm very glad that I've handed over the running of the Tarlest End to Sim and the podcast to Ben and Ross, who have been doing fantastic work on all of that front. On that note, of course, again, their season wrap up from the main show is available for you to download and listen to now. Lots of other specials have been out as well. Plenty of content to keep you up to date with. I'm sure the Tyler Sim podcast and the podcast extra will return over the next few weeks. We'll be keeping you up to date with all the big developments as they happen. I'm fairly sure I'll be nudging and sliding into both of your DMs as soon as a takeover is confirmed. Okay. To get a bit of reaction on that, and of course we'll keep up to date with all the transfer movements and bits and pieces as well. You can follow me on Twitter at Wimby. Of course you can follow at the Tarlhurst End on all of your favorite social media platforms. A big thank you once again to our sponsors ZCZ Films and to footcoaching.com. It is team of the season time on FC24, so if you want to get better at your game, footcoaching.com is the place for you to go. Use the code TTE and you get a discount on that as well. So that is it for the Tarlhurst End podcast extra for the year. It's been great being back. It's been great hearing some old voices, new voices. Very much welcome. Only one thing that I'm going to say to finish off the season. Come on, you Arse.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.